Well, a record of 11,600 people are living in homeless accommodation here in Ireland. It's a 30% increase in the space of the year. There are now 11,632 people, including almost 1,600 families living homeless in Ireland. And this figure also includes 3,442 children who were in emergency accommodation in the week leading up to Christmas. In Kildare, 205 adults accessed emergency accommodation. That's an increase from 193 in the previous month of November. Well, Executive Director of the Simon Communities, Wayne Stanley, is on the line now. Good morning to you, Wayne.
Good morning, Owen.
Unfortunately, Wayne, we've been talking to you month after month after month, and the figures continue to increase.
Yeah, that's exactly what's been happening, and it is particularly upsetting this month, because we had seen in the start of November the moratorium on evictions come in, and traditionally over the last number of years we would have seen a fall in homelessness in December, usually because family and friends have taken people in and given them that respite from homelessness. Now that did still happen, and we did see a fall, a welcome fall, small though it was, in the number of children in homelessness in the month of December. But overall, particularly driven by an increase in single persons in homelessness, we did see an increase in December. And that's 12 months of increasing homelessness in a calendar year. I think that's the first time we've ever seen that since they started collecting these numbers way back in 2014, when the homeless crisis really began to take hold. So we've been at this a long time. It does seem to continue to get worse. I think I said last month that, you know, a year ago we wouldn't have anticipated being where we are now. And I think that's even ever more true this month. But it's also, I mean, we do need to acknowledge that there is the moratorium on evictions has been there, and it will take time for that to have its full impact. So in the January and February figures, we will start to see, its true impact, because what you do see is that families in particular, but also single people, what they will do is they get evicted from the private rental sector and they go and stay with family and friends. So there's that kind of period of homelessness, and those relationships breaking down is a lot of where we see families coming into homelessness. And we also see landlords selling up as being another driver, where there isn't that protection there for people. So those kind of things, one will work through the system, and the second one, the moratorium will have slowed that down.
Is that moratorium still due to expire in March, Wayne?
It is. Now, the way it's designed, there isn't a cliff edge, so it's not that everybody who, you know, that in March will see a huge sway of people coming into being evicted. So it'll be spread out over March, April, May, and even into June. But it is very concerning, because we saw basically the turning point on the previous moratorium, which did help to bring down the number of people in homelessness, was when that was lifted, we saw a very rapid increase to where we are today on that being lifted. So it is a real concern that if we don't get the infrastructure in place, and what I mean by that is provisions in place that will help keep people out of homelessness, such as the rollout of the Simon Homeless Prevention Bill, or local authorities ramping up the tenant in situ potential to buy properties from landlords who want to sell up and have a tenant who maybe is on a low income and at risk of homelessness. That can help us to keep people in their homes in the first instance. If we can ramp that up at scale, it could be that the moratorium, if lifted, will have less of an impact. And then the other side of it is what did happen during COVID, and again, this is about learning the lessons of what has worked before, is that when we got people to bring the numbers down, you need to move people on from homelessness, stop people coming in the first instance and move people on. So we need to see the stock of vacant properties in the state, innovations like modular building ramped up. And we need local authorities to look at the stock that they have, that they are allocating at the moment, this new stock that's coming online, and making sure that we are allocating it to people who are in homelessness or the immediate risk of homelessness.
Okay. Do you know what's really striking me over the last number of months, Wayne, from looking at these figures, is that you know, obviously there's 8,300 people homeless in Dublin. That includes more than 2,500 children. But it seems to be gradually getting bigger and bigger and bigger, these homeless figures, in other counties. Maybe counties that wouldn't have had high homelessness previously. The likes of, you know, Kildare, Offaly, those, you know, smaller counties outside cities are experiencing homelessness now as well.
Yeah, well, we would have always said that probably these numbers are a useful tool in seeing the trajectory of where homelessness is going, but they never counted the full picture of homelessness. So we do feel that outside the major urban areas, hidden homelessness has been an ongoing and long-term issue. The growth in these numbers is particularly concerning because that means that the local authorities have been forced to put more emergency accommodation in place. So acute has the homelessness become, that it's becoming, in essence, less hidden and more immediate. Yeah, it absolutely is a growing issue. What we have seen, so if you look at areas of move-on, one of the major sources of move-on has been the housing assistance payment, which allows people to support people with an income supplement to help them pay the rents that we have in our private rental market. That has fallen very, very significantly in the final, you know, sort of the first two quarters of 2022 and into the third quarter. But what we're seeing is those numbers are being held up by the Dublin region. Outside of Dublin, the HAP had actually been sort of become less and less available to people outside of Dublin since all of 2021. And most of those counties outside of Dublin now have fewer, or by the end of 2021, had fewer HAP tenancies, HAP stock, than they started with at the beginning of 2021. So, yes, homelessness is a national issue. Mm-hmm. It's affecting every county, almost every town and village at this point. We see it in the Midlands, we see it in Galway, we see it in Cork, and all the extended areas. Either people are having to come into the urban areas to try and get emergency accommodation, or they're squatting in towns like Athlone and Tullamore.
Yeah,
we're
only talking about emergency accommodation. So these figures from the Department of Housing don't include refugees, don't include asylum seekers, women in refuge centre, rough sleepers, those who are sleeping on the streets, etc., etc. Do we have any idea of what those figures could be like, Wayne? We've 11,600 in emergency accommodation. When we take into account that hidden homeless, as it's called, what kind of figures are we talking about? Do you have any idea?
It's very hard to assess what hidden homelessness is. I mean, we did a poll last year where we tried to ascertain what that could be. Mm. And what we were asking people was if they were staying involuntarily with family or friends, or had stayed with family or friends involuntarily in the last 12 months. And depending on what you look at it, people who said that they personally had experienced that, if you extrapolate out the number from the 1,000 people that were asked by Red Sea, that would be in the region of 100,000 people would experience hidden homelessness over the course of a year. So they could be as high as, if you were to include that, people who talked about extended family and friends, that number could be as high as 300,000. But certainly, it is a very, very significant number of people who are caught up in this cycle of our housing crisis, and that can lead to hidden homelessness. I suppose to put that in context, that is over the period of a year, and that we would expect people to come in and out of that circumstances. But what we're seeing, and I think what's really acute in these numbers, and particularly that phenomena in December that we talked about, is that the capacity for people to move on from the crisis is getting less and less. So we do really need to see the allocations of local authorities, the use of that vacant stock, the ramping up of things like modular build and local authority build to provide that capacity to support people out of homelessness and out of their housing crisis, which is obviously running up and down the country. Because that's the other thing. I mean, when we did that poll, it was really striking the number of people I spoke to who said, you know what, actually, I know someone in that circumstance.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it really is striking the how pervasive this homelessness crisis and this housing crisis now is in our society. And we're seeing that all over.
Okay, Wayne Stanley, Executive Director of the Simon Communities of Ireland, thanks for your time as always this morning, Wayne, and very, very striking figures there that Wayne has mentioned, 11,600 in emergency accommodation, but he says, and only going by estimates if you were to take into account hidden homelessness, which is a wide range, it covers a wide range of situations and scenarios, we could be looking at 300,000 people without permanent accommodation here in this country. Shocking, shocking numbers. Some of the messages then that are coming into us on the WhatsApp this morning, 0833 97 97 97, and one here saying it's amazing and a very sad fact that in 2023 the antics of many countries and their leaders against their own citizens and citizens living in other countries is forcing so many hundreds of thousands from their homes and countries. It's not only Ukrainians that are being forced to leave their homes and country. Very, very sad to see in this year. Another one in here. Could you please wish my brother Kevin O'Reilly a very happy 60th birthday today? That comes in from Tommy O'Reilly and all the gang in Newbridge. Have a great day, Kevin. And good to hear from you, Tommy. Hope all is well. And another birthday request here. Can you wish Chloe O'Flaherty from Allen Wood a happy 6th birthday? Birthday from Dad, Mam, Hayley and Killian. Keep your messages coming in. Lots more to come after the break, including we'll tell you about that new permanent space that's been granted planning permission in Kildangan for those with dementia.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, you're very welcome back. Some good news for the south of the county, because planning has been granted for a permanent space for those with dementia in Kildare, and it's been granted down in the Kildangan area. On the line is Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning to you, Owen.
Give us some of the background here, Fiona, regarding this dementia centre, because it's been a long time in the works.
Absolutely. The Alzheimer's Society of Ireland have been operating for over 20 years in Kildare, and during that time they've actually moved 5 times, and that certainly caused huge disruption and distress to those who availed of the services, and of course to their families as well. And at this point in time the ASI have not been operating a service, because during COVID, as we know, everything closed, and then not having a proper facility. So, you know, having a permanent place for those living with dementia to support them and to support their families, to give the families respite, has always been a real key political priority of mine. I've worked closely with the local group and, of course, at a national level. I'm chairperson of the All-Party Committee on Dementia within the Oireachtas. So a particular premises, we have been looking around at different premises in South Kildare, but this particular premises presented itself, so to speak. And Siobhan O'Connor, who's the head of operations with Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, and obviously the HSE, because they are very much involved in funding it, and myself went to look at the premises. It's absolutely top class. And the good news is that it will be open very soon, because it's an existing building, so just needed to be rectified to make sure that it would be operationally working for those that need it. And it's not going to be just a place for those with dementia to come for the day, for their own socialisation, for their bonding, etc. But it will be a mainstay in terms of the other services that ASI and HSI will be giving. You know, for example, looking after home care, etc.
Okay, tell us where it's actually going to be in Kildangan then, Fiona, and also the fact that that location might seem like it's quite rural, but you have to remember how close it is to the likes of Monastrevin, Newbridge, Athy, and I'm sure that was a deciding factor.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a small new estate that has been built in Kildangan, and this dementia centre is just at the corner of that. And you know, I've spoken to some of the residents in Kildangan, and they felt they'd like to have some involvement and some type of community aspect. And the ASI are very welcome, which I think is great, to allow the locals use this as a meeting place when they need to do that. So in relation to the point that you make, and it's a very relevant one, Owen, in relation to transport, there is a bus that has been fully funded, mainly by fundraising locally. So that will be used to collect people who need to use the centre and bring them there. And when we look at it, really, it's only a few minutes' drive from particularly Kildare and Monastrevin. But also it's very close. It's only just over 15 minutes from Newbridge, from Rathangan, and just over 20 minutes from Naas. So the fact that that transport is being provided. And, you know, just to give a shout out to all of those who've been involved over the years in terms of getting to this point, particularly Marie Conlon. And we had a memory walk in memory of her, and also as a fundraiser last September. People like Ursula Nolan, like Claire, they've been involved for so many years. So it's just wonderful to see this in place to support those with dementia, because we reckon with the records that there's about, you know, 1,500 people with dementia living in Kildare. So it's very, very important that we put the supports in place to support them. They have a place that they can belong. They have a place that they have cognitive stimulation. So it just makes life that little bit easier for everyone that's involved.
Indeed. And just to recap then, Fiona, as you mentioned from the outset, the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland has been operating services in Kildare for over 20 years. It's moved five times in that period, and with, as you say, 1,500 people living with dementia in Kildare and the surrounding areas, this is very welcome and very much needed. Remind us of the actual facilities then, and I suppose the services that are going to be available to people at this centre in Kildangan.
Well, the up to now 3 days had been agreed and were paid for by the HSE. So a service could be provided in those temporary centres for 3 days. But another piece of good news is that the HSE have agreed to fund up to 5 days. So that means that there will be availability over 5 days. It doesn't mean that residents will go 5 days, but different people will go. Some may only go for 1 day, some for two, some for three. It all depends what suits the particular individual, their family circumstances, and of course the capacity that the respite centre will be able to take. But there is also home care, obviously, for people with dementia. So that will be administrated from the respite centre, and daycare at home. So it will be a hub. It also will be a support centre for families, because families need support as well. So there'll be an opportunity for them to meet, to get together and to have support given to them. So it's really going to be a very holistic approach in terms of supporting families who are living with the diagnosis, which is a very difficult one for one of their loved ones.
Yeah, certainly some good news for the south of the county and for Kildare as a whole. Planning granted for a permanent space in Kildangan for those with dementia in Kildare. And the best of luck to the local branch of the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, of course, in organising that. And that is Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin with that news. Thanks, Fiona.
Thanks, Owen. And can I wish you and all your listeners a very happy Bridget's Day. It's wonderful to see it being recognised finally with a bank holiday this year. And there's some fabulous events going on all around Kildare, and I'm looking forward to bringing school children from Atgarvan up to Leinster House, where they're going to give a demonstration on making Bridget's crosses.
Good stuff. All right, thanks, Fiona. Happy Bridget's Day to you as well for Wednesday. And of course, we've lots more to get through over the next few days in order to celebrate St. Bridget's Day as well here on KFM. That's Fiona O'Loughlin. Just looking at the latest trolley figures which have come into us from the INMO, 407 admitted patients are waiting for beds this morning, according to today's INMO Trolley Watch. 332 patients are waiting in the emergency department, while 75 are in wards elsewhere in the hospital. And if we look at Naas, figures have come into us there for the Naas area and the general hospital. hospital there. 15 patients are on trolleys while 3 are in wards. So in total, 18 patients there on trolleys at Naas General Hospital. The largest such figure is in University Hospital Limerick with 55 patients on trolleys, followed by Cork University Hospital with 50 patients on trolleys there. And then some of the others in the matter, 23. Tallaght University Hospital just up the road, 25 patients on trolleys there. The same in Sligo and also in St Luke's in Kilkenny. So the latest figures there coming in from the INMO. Local issues once again. Fine Gael councillor on the Claymanuth Municipal District, Brendan Wise, joins us. Morning, Brendan.
Morning, all.
Community groups in the northwest of the county being encouraged to apply for the Dreahid Community Grant Scheme. What is this, Brendan, and how can people avail of it?
Yeah, the Dreahid Community Grant Scheme, Owen, it's operated and run by Kildare County Council, but on behalf of Borden and Mona. And they fund the scheme as part of their obligations regarding their landfill facility as they have in the Timahoe South Bob. So it's been going on for a number of years, so most groups in the area that can apply for this have been are aware of the scheme. But just for listeners outside of the area, it's important to point out this scheme can only be applied for by community groups that are within 9 kilometres of the landfill. So it's for local groups being to offset the impact of the landfill. So areas that are included would be like the parishes of Carbery and Ballina, and it's actually in Carbery Parish, this landfill, and then Timahoe, Stapletown, Prosperous, Kildove, Robertstown, Kilmeade, Ballyteague, Allenwood and Lullymore. But it was changed that we can look at groups just outside the 9 kilometres on a case-by-case basis. And another change we made last year, Owen, and I was talking to some groups that aren't aware of this, resident associations and the parent associations can also apply for the scheme. They were excluded in the past, but that was changed last year, and we want to encourage those groups to apply. But just to note, parents' associations can't apply for the likes of work that the Department of Education should do, such as building classrooms or any kind of building work. So, yeah, there is a guideline document on with a lot of detail on the Kildare County Council website, but most of the detail around the scheme is on the actual application form itself. It's an online form. It used to be paper-based, but now it's an online form and you can make progress on that and save it and then add bits to it. And then within that, you'll see notes. And one of the things, I'm on the committee along with Councillor Darragh Fitzpatrick, and one of the things we're trying to promote is projects that enhance the environment or biodiversity. So they're strongly supported. So tree planting or pollinator areas like wildflower gardens, that kind of thing that gives a lot of value, we think, to a local community. It wouldn't be too much expense, and they're the kind of things we're favouring in the scheme. So it's open at the moment for applications. As I said, they have to be made online, and it's open until March 16th at 5 p.m.
Okay, can you give us some examples of community groups maybe in the past, Brendan, that have availed of this scheme, just to give people an idea?
I can now, and I mentioned Carbery Parish, and I always love to see more and more groups from Carbery. But we're talking about resident associations, last year there was a Ticknevin group made an application, and I don't know if they were on the program to talk about. They had a lovely little boat along the side of the canal there with flower beds in it, and I believe the group applied for a grant for that. I know from Allenwood Tidy Towns, which I'm involved in, we did get a flower bed up along one of the estates, and then we planted a number of ash trees in another estate in the village. So that kind of thing. And one really big project on was a lapwing conservation area in the Blackwood area that I think is really successful, because I know you've had talks about that before. You're talking about these birds, the lapwing and the curlew, and this is going to be really successful on, and that was very welcomed by the committee, because that obviously prevents the hopefully conserve some lapwing in our own area here. So.
Okay, you might run through the villages and areas that are covered in this again, Brendan, and then, as you say, if you're outside the 9 kilometre radius of the Dreahid landfill site, it's kind of taken by a case-by-case basis, but just those areas.
Well, in Parish of Carbery, so say going in the past of who would apply would be Killina, Ticknevin, Durrantorne, Carbery Village. Kilchin Row and Johnstown Bridge would also be within the radius, and that's Clocharinco and Broadford would be just outside the 9, but they were successful last year, some of them on a case by case. And then you also have Timahoe, Stapletown, Prosperous, which is just on the edge of the 9 kilometres, but Prosperous Village would be included, Kildove, Robertstown, Kilmeade, Ballyteague, Allenwood and Lullymore. And generally, they're the areas that the community groups apply for every year, and there could be up to 50 groups in those areas applying for this scheme.
All right, great stuff. Well, if community groups want to have a look and get more information there, you can get it on the Kildare County Council website, www.kildareco.ie. And the deadline for applications there is the middle of March. But the website has all the information there. And just to bring it to people's attention, that is Councillor Brendan Wise of Fine Gael, Clane Maynooth Municipal District, of course. Community groups in the northwest of Kildare encouraged to apply for the Dreahid Community Grant Scheme. Get on it now.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Sports Review Monday on Kildare Today.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to the show. Time now to take a look back at the weekend sporting action. Mixed bag, for the three Kildare teams that were in action. Defeat for the Kildare men's footballers, victory for the hurlers and the women's footballers. And we'll get to those two games in a moment. But first of all, we start off at Croke Park on Saturday evening. The Allianz Football League Division 2 game, opening round of the league. Dublin 111, Kildare 13 points, and Ger McNally is on the line now. Ger, good morning. And this really was a missed opportunity, would we say, for Kildare? Incredibly unlucky against Dublin.
Yeah, there was kind of mixed emotions really coming out of Croke Park on Saturday evening. On the face of it, a 1 point defeat against Dublin in Croke Park as a huge improvement on the many kind of recent performances in Croke Park against Dublin, of course, most notably last year in the Leinster final when they were completely blitzed. But at the same time, this was a Dublin side well below their best, and yet the nagging feeling is that Kildare could have smashed at least a draw late on, and to be fair to Glenrothes team, that probably would have been they would have been worthy of that draw and to get a point on the board in the league table. But ultimately, it was just a 1 point separating the sides at the end, and yeah, just it did feel a little bit like a missed opportunity for Kildare, given how well I thought they played, particularly in the last 20 minutes when they put Dublin under a lot of pressure.
There's been a lot of talk on social media, Ger, maybe about a couple of soft frees that Dublin may have received, particularly one there that I saw that looked like a third man tackle. Did you feel, and not to, you know, talk about the referee too much, did you feel though that those frees maybe made the difference from a Dublin point of view?
I think the referee was a little bit erratic on the night, so I saw that video going around. I think you're talking about the free that was awarded for the very first point of the game for Dublin,
yeah.
But I felt in reply, because their first point of the game, which is pretty much straight after that incident at the far end of the field, was a very soft free as well. There wasn't much contact at all on Jack Robinson, and myself and Peter McConnell were saying that if the referee was setting a stall out such to award frees at either end like that so early in the game, that there were going to be an awful lot of frees. But then he got very inconsistent, and there was some different challenges that had a lot more contact in them that looked far more worthy of a free kick than either of those two incidents. But yeah, they weren't awarded. But yeah, he was erratic, but I wouldn't lay the blame on the referee for losing the game. I just think he was a bit inconsistent for both sides.
Yeah, we don't want to take really moral victories from these games, because ultimately Dublin get the 2 points, but there were some fantastic performances from a Kildare point of view. And one thing that I noted in your commentary, and you made reference to this, Ger, was the press that was being put on and the pressure that was put on the Dublin defence from the Kildare forwards. A lot of turnovers there and some scores coming from that, which I'm sure the management team would have been very happy with.
Yeah, definitely, and obviously it's harder to do that in Croke Park than many of the other pitches around the country because of the spaces, and Dublin are obviously very, very well used to using those spaces to their advantage. But yeah, Kildare did put an awful lot of pressure on the Dublin back line, and look, to be fair, Dublin on another day had an awful lot of chances themselves, so I mean they could have put the game to bed on a number of occasions, and particularly in the second half, in the opening 10 minutes there, they had probably got to three really decent goal chances that maybe on another day could have ended up in the back of the net. But when they didn't kill Kildare off, Kildare were always in the game, and Jack Robinson I thought was a star on the night for Kildare. Right from the very first ball he caused Dublin a huge amount of problems, and they had no way to deal with him, and he certainly is a huge positive. Another positive then was Kevin Feely appearing off the bench, and what Kevin Feely has done kind of flies in the face of all medical science, really. He ruptured his Achilles at the end of August, nearing his 30th birthday, and to be back on the pitch 5 months later is just, as I said, it kind of beggars belief, really, that he's been able to do that. You know, as an amateur sports fan, we're trying to run his own business as well. And Glenn Ryan was full of praise for Kevin after the game as well, which says a lot about I'm sure what he's gone through in the last 5 months, and they're positive. And look, even the 1 point defeat, I mean, Kildare went down from Division 1 last year by just a single point and scoring difference in the league table. So to only lose by 1 point, yeah, look, it's disappointing that Kildare couldn't have got a draw out of the game at least. But yeah, look, it could prove to be a very vital result come the end of the reckoning in the league table.
Let's hear then from the Kildare manager, Glenn Ryan.
Disappointing in the end, not to get something out of the game. Thought the fellas reacted very well to what was a nightmare start, really. Could have been a tendency to go back into our shell and relive the nightmare of last year in the Leinster final. But their reaction to it was very positive. From an application and effort point of view, I think we probably played the football in the first half that would have allowed us to play to our abilities, but it was good that they reacted very positively the way they did.
Yeah, and of course you can hear that interview in full on Kildare Scoreboard this evening with Paul Power between 6:30 and 7:00. Before we look at the hurlers and the women's footballers, Ger, just finally on the men's footballers, we referenced this with Tommy Callaghan last Friday. It's a tough start to Division 2 and it's notorious for being a very difficult division to get out of. Cork up next, having, you know, started off there against Dublin, and still games to come against Clare, Derry, etc. So it's going to be a tough campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking ahead now, obviously 6 games left in Division 3, in Division 2, but the 3 home games I think are going to be absolutely crucial, because outside of Dublin, probably the stiffest opponents that Kildare will face are the 3 teams they have at home, Cork, Derry and Meath. So I think the home form is going to be absolutely key. Obviously, Kildare will have to pick up away wins as well to go with that home form, but those 3 home matches are going to be absolutely vital, you would feel. Cork themselves are going into the game after losing yesterday as well, so they will certainly be gunning for a result as well. But it's a big opportunity for Kildare to get a home win on the board, get 2 points, and then look towards there. I think it's Clare then away there in a couple of weeks after that. But yeah, the Newbridge form, I think, is going to be absolutely crucial for Kildare's promotion aspirations this season in Division 2.
Yeah, looking forward to following their trials and tribulations over the course of the next few weeks, all in association, of course, with Handling Concrete Products of Robertstown. Stay with us, Ger, because we'll be back to you in a moment for a word on the women footballers. But Seamus Dillon is also on the line. He was at the Co Cup game on Saturday afternoon between Kildare and Meath in Dungannon, and Seamus really never looked in doubt from a Kildare point of view, defeating Clare defeating Meath 224 to 18 points, and winning the Co Cup in turn.
Yeah, impressive fashion throughout the whole campaign. On to start it off, right from the throw-in, Kildare were on top and took them 3 minutes, registered a first score, and Beckham Flaherty got a green flag for Kildare, a goal after 3 minutes, and then Brian Byrne added a point a minute later, and that 4-point advantage just grew as the game went on, and they moved into a 2-14 to 10-point advantage at a half-time break. Brian Byrne getting on the end of a brilliant James Burke pass to goal after 17 minutes, and at that stage Kildare were 2-7 to 4 points ahead, and really no way back for Meath.
Absolutely. The season as a whole and the pre-season, so to speak, has been very impressive. Kildare never really looked in doubt in any of those games that they played. Maybe, you know, a couple of kind of near misses, maybe against Wicklow in particular, springs to mind. But other than that, they've been dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you go back to Christy Ring last year, that they went through that unbeaten, and that they continued that through to the start of this year. And I suppose last year at the beginning of the league campaign, they went into it without an ace contingent, and you know it was a harder task for David Herity and the players, but they ground out an excellent win up and down, and that sort of started off their season last year, and they've just grown on that. And I think I just read somewhere this morning they've hit 5 goals and 84 points in those 4 rounds of the Keogh Cup. And apart from the Wicklow match, where I suppose the word we used was that they were leggy and they had done a heavy sessions in that previous week, but they've really been impressive, and now they can look forward to going on to play Carlow next Saturday, the first game in the National League.
Yeah, it's 10 wins in a row now for the hurlers in all competitions, spanning over last year and into this year as well, which is a great record. And one point that has been made is that they're going to meet the same opposition now that they have in the Keogh Cup. The likes of Carlow, the likes of Down, the likes of Wicklow maybe in the league and in the Joe McDonagh Cup as well. So, you know, it'll be hard to know how much to read into it and how strong those squads were from the other counties in those games in the Keogh Cup. Joe Cup. Let's hear from the manager, David Herity, following that win against Meath.
It's easy to write off the pre-season competition as, look, we're building and it doesn't make much difference. But it does, because it shows the consistency that possibly wasn't there in the first few years as us together as a group. Now, we've won the Christie Ring and now we've backed it up by winning a Keogh Cup. And, geez, the momentum is everything when it starts going into the league, and especially when the games are coming thick and fast. So I'm delighted with that.
Again, you can hear that interview in full tonight on Kildare Scoreboard between 6:30 and 7:00. You can also hear from the ladies' manager, Diane O'Hora, because, Gerard, they had a great win against Longford, 4-16 to 6 points in the Leader Ladies National Football League Division 3 Round 2. And that's two wins from two now.
Yeah, what a very good start to life as Kildare manager for Diane O'Hora. I suppose she really has been a little bit fortuitous, I suppose, maybe to stumble on Roisin Bourne back to full fitness, because the Sarsfield girl, who missed about 18 months or so really of football due to a bad shoulder injury and then an ACL, she's back fully fit this season, and she is making her mark felt very much so in the early stages of the season. She made a goal scoring return to action in the first round of the league, and then got two goals of 5 points yesterday, which is just a superb start. And at her best, she's one of the best players in the country, and she's a huge addition to the Kildare panel this year. Also to her clubmate, Ciara Price, got two goals yesterday as well, and she's another player who maybe would have made more of an impact with Kildare down through the years earlier on, only for bad injuries herself, but she is an absolute flyer of it there, absolutely lightning fast, and got a couple of goals there. Nessa Dooley with 5 points as well. So yeah, altogether it looks very good there for Kildare. They're at the top of the table there in Division 3 on scoring difference ahead of Wexford and Louth, who both have won their opening two games as well. And next up for Kildare is a game against Clare. So yeah, it's going very well at the moment for the Kildare ladies, and let's hope they can continue on.
Yes, so they've scored 729 in the last two games and only conceded 12 points, which is a great return from the forwards, and also great work being done by the defence. And interestingly, and this point has been made as well, that the league this year is just kind of a straight shootout, Ger, I think, isn't it? Whoever finishes top of the league wins it. There's no semi-finals or finals, so every win is very, very important.
Yeah, okay, and then even the scoring difference is going to be important then as well, just looking how tight it is, obviously, after just two rounds. But there's some good sides out there as well, the likes of Wexford, Louth and Clare themselves, who've lost a game out of their first two as well, have been tough opponents for Kildare down through the years as well. So, yeah, there's some big games to come for that Kildare side, but there's a real nice balance across that squad now at the moment, because there's some good work done by the previous management teams as well to build up that panel. And there's the likes of Roisin Bourne now, Ellen Dowling, these are experienced players on the team. But then there's a lot of young players coming onto that panel to freshen it up as well. And they have a nice balance now of youth and experience right across that. And as you mentioned there as well, they have some really talented forwards in the squad and even on the bench as well, players who wouldn't have been involved yesterday, pushing on the starting six up front as well. So there's a lot to be hopeful for of this Kildare side. But I suppose the one warning key thing is that they have in previous seasons as well started very well in the league season, and then just have maybe just been pipped at the post in semi-finals and finals and stuff like that. So they just, I suppose, have to keep the form going as best they can. But I think with the competition that's in the squad there now, and the players that Diana Horla has to pick from, I think they're well capable of doing so.
Okay, thanks to our reporter Ger McNally, and also to Seamus Dillon and Tara Byrne for all the coverage over the course of the weekend, and to our sponsors Hanlon Concrete Products of Robertstown.